This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a celebrated chef showcasing the rich and vibrant flavors of Peruvian cuisine and dropping his next big project. He's an executive chef and founder of Artesano Restaurant and Ailu Restaurant. It's Rodrigo Fernandini. Rodrigo, welcome to the podcast. Some of our listeners might recognize you from your large social media presence or your dig in with episodes on foodnetwork.com. So we're going to start there. We're going to dig in a little more with you here on Food Network Obsessed. Sound good?
Absolutely. Jamie, how are you? I'm so happy to be here on your podcast. Thank you so much for the invite. I can't wait to chat with you and, you know, get your audience to get to know me a little bit more and have fun.
Absolutely. Have fun. That's the number one rule here on the podcast. In both of your dig in with episodes, I love how you talk about your Peruvian grandmother as your inspiration. And beyond her sharing, you know, her recipes with you for ceviche and chicken stew with rice, could you share how exactly she influenced your culinary journey?
Absolutely. So My interest for the food started at a very young age. I would say around 5. I remember walking in the kitchen, seeing my grandma and my mom sweating garlic and onion in the pot in preparation for lunch that day. And that's something that was like a natural perfume in my house back in the day. You know? And I was like, oh my God, what is that smell every time? And I really like it. And my mom and grandma were very curious about my interest of asking questions about the smell. So they're trying to like show me a little bit more to see if I'm really interested. Like, hey, you want to see what we're doing? And I remember me putting my whole head inside the pot, like just to deep breath the smell. And I was like, from that moment, I fall in love with the kitchen. You know? So my grandma, every time she cooked, she always tried to bring me, take me to the mercado, used to show me how to recognize a good tomato, how to show me how to recognize an apple. And it was a game, you know? And I think that it's nice that you recognize with somebody, for example, I just had a baby boy, Luca, he's 9 months old. So I'm already planning on that when he started recognizing, I'm like playing around with him, you know, giving him a strawberry, giving him a little bit of a mango, see what his reaction is. So my grandma is like, even today that she's not really with me physically anymore, she's still in my heart. And like, even today that I'm an adult person, comes to me with the lessons that I want to teach my kid, knowing how to influence him, not necessarily for him to become a professional cook, but to appreciate the product, no, like where it comes from, like the work it takes to be in your plate. And all those things make me to really appreciate the work of everybody when they put a dish together. So if you make you think a little bit more like the whole picture, no?
I love your stories about, you know, you as a kid and those smells and sticking your head inside an entire pot. But what was the first thing that you actually learned to cook on your own?
Rice. Peru is big in rice. We have one of the reasons why Peruvian gastronomy is so big is we have influence from many cultures around the world. And rice, we're like so big in rice, like almost any traditional Peruvian dish is with rice. So, and we are very proud about the way we cook rice. So it's not like, so when I moved to America, quick short story, we got like steamed rice, right? You got Chinese food, you get steamed rice. And normally it's literally rice boiled with water, right? But in Peru, we actually, even if it's a plain rice, we sweat a little bit of garlic with oil, and then we add the rice and we cook it nice and slow. And then we add the salt. We season the water just like a salty water, but it's not salty at the end. It's perfectly balanced. So a Peruvian had to make rice well, and we don't use a rice pot. You have to do that. You don't even do like, okay, one cup. You literally open the bag, do it like this, open the sink, measure the water, put your finger just to make sure it's the right amount. And then you nail it, no? And that's kind of like, okay, the first lesson, you need to make how to make rice. So that's what I did.
So how was your first rice making experience? Did you get it on the first try?
That was terrible. It was terrible. And the second one was even worse.
Because really?
Because I thought like I wanted it to do it like Peruvian style, like you nail it, you just go like that, and it put too much water, and literally it looked like a rice pudding. So it wasn't good. And then the second time I did the opposite. I put too much rice, too less water. So when I try, and I'm like, oh, this is looking good, because I had the memory for the first time, and it was undercooked, so it was hard at the bite. And I was like, oh my god, this is not good. My grandma come and tells me, okay, we're gonna do this the right way. So she showed me, you know, you have to do this step by step. And then it's funny because those memories tell me that you need to respect the process, right? Mm. There is something that you cannot rush, even to make a simple rice dish. It's different when you sweat the garlic for 20 seconds than just throw everything together and send it. It's going to be okay, but there's always a way to make it better. And that's when you say, okay, there's no shortcut for doing the right thing, right?
I know you said that she continues to inspire you, even though she's not here physically. What are some like specific dishes on your menus or things that you make on a regular basis that still kind of pay homage to her memory?
Well, I have a restaurant in New York City called Artesano, and I know we're not there yet, but a lot of my menus inspire in seafood where I'm from in the north, from the sea. But at home, I really like homey dishes, all right? Mm-hmm. I don't do fancy stuff. Of course, sometimes I throw a tomahawk in the grill for the family and we just slice it and eat it all together. But normally I do like stews, you know, like soups, something with rice, quick, simple salads. We try to eat very balanced at the house. And well, my Luca is still a baby, so he's not eating a lot these days. But of course, I plan to start cooking him, teaching him the basics as soon as he can. But back here with my wife, we, you know, always as protein with a little bit of stew, some rice, some potatoes. Peru, we eat a lot of potatoes. So of course, the first month we were living together, like, dude, can you change a little bit the car? Like, can we do like sweet potatoes or something? Like, okay. Yeah, we can do
like
that.
I'm from Peru.
Yeah. Okay, fair. So yeah.
What are some other maybe, you know, traditions or dishes from your family that hold a special place in your heart?
Well, ceviche, 100%. And not only because it's a national pride, it's because it's funny when we're growing up, everything is about Peru, food in Peru normally. And we have our aunties, our tias, cousins. They always, when it's a birthday, for example, no, they normally bring a dish with them. But it's like a whole thing. And whoever had to bring the ceviche dish, oh my god, you better prepare because a lot of pressure. And normally my grandma would be the one that opens it. Like normally when you bring the food, it's not like, okay, let's go. It's like the grandma started it, right? So she started open the first dish and all the time she tries it and we're like, oh my god, here we go. She's like, oh, it's amazing, it's good. So she never says something bad, but it still is like that pressure, you know. because she's the best, to be honest. You know, I don't know how she does it, but she used to be the best in everything about cooking. But yeah, that's like everything of the conditioners is like always when we celebrate life, when we celebrate an accomplishment for a family member, is more significant to bring something that you handmade at your house, that you took the time to cook, to do, even if it's a recipe that takes a couple of days, than buy a expensive gift, no? We like kind of like, it's kind of like cultural, I don't know, at least for my family, like, hey, I make you this, you know, like mm-hmm. I cook this for
comes
you.
Comes from the heart,
you know?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then you can slide out a gift card with it. But you have to cook, you guys cook something too, you know?
You have to cook something. I know you talk about your grandma a lot. Were there other family members who played a significant role in kind of shaping this culinary journey for you? Or was she like kind of that bright star, that only star?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely she was the one that started it. The mm-hmm. one that was more, I mean, I know that you asked me this question, made me think like back at that time, she had a little more time too, mm-hmm. you know, like to hang out around and teach me stuff. My mom was working, my dad as well. So they were teaching me some stuff, but wasn't like, oh, I have time to, you know, spend half of one morning just to teach you how to do things. So even though once I started showing real interest in cooking, my mom was like, okay, this weekend I'm going to show you this weekend I'm going to show you that. But they thought that this was, of course, I was a kid, so how would I know, right? Mm-hmm. I was doing it just for fun, something cheap to do, because my mom was like, okay, it's the most important thing about cooking is washing the dishes. So you need to make sure you're good at it. You know, you scrub the whole thing. So at the end, my mom was cooking the whole thing and they're like, now you have to wash the dishes. But I didn't do it. No, you have to watch and learn. Oh my God, I've been watching you the whole time. I'm done washing dishes. So it's like, okay, she told me like, if you really want it, next time I'll do it. Oh my God. Okay. But yeah, my mom was also a very big, moms in Peru cook, almost all of them like cooking. So I would say my mom and my grandma were the main ones that start that, you know, engine inside me.
Yeah. I mean, so how did it go from just something that you enjoyed, you know, doing with your grandmother or your mother to applying for culinary school at Le Cordon Bleu in Lima?
Okay. So I had my own journey through the education system prior to finding culinary school, to be honest, mm-hmm. now that you mentioned that. I didn't really want to become a chef at the beginning because, to be honest with you, I was a little scared of mm-hmm. not being good enough to make decent money or make a living out of it. Because even though Peru is huge in culinary, in food, it was like a scary path to follow without having some family chefs in the background that kind of like, okay, let me show you the way. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, I don't know. So I went to law school for 1 year. I went
for
to
law
business school.
School.
Yeah, I went to law school for 1 year. I went to, and I dropped out. I dropped out both in law and business school. So I didn't know what to do. But before that, my personality back in high school, I was always very moving around, very like a squirrel, no? Like I didn't know what to do with my hands, hard to pay attention in class, didn't know what to do with my hands. So I struggled myself to the finish line of high school, like to be honest. And mm-hmm. I don't know how I did it, but my parents were a little worried about my future that time, to be fair. And I then dropped out business school, dropped out law school, I didn't know what to do. So before I went to culinary school, I wanted to make sure that was what I really wanted it before dropping out of that again, right?
So fair.
I just went to knock doors to restaurants and then finally one restaurant said, okay, you know what? You want to work for free? You want to try it out? Welcome. Come in. And the second I stepped into the kitchen, I fell in love. The mm-hmm. adrenaline, the teamwork, the dynamic, the pressure, the flying tickets. I found like what for some people will sound like chaotic, for me was heaven, right? I was like, oh my God, this is my place. I like to work under pressure. I like the environment. So what it was supposed to be a 2-hour shift, it was like a 12-hour rush. I really, at the end of the day, I wanted it more. And that's what I did. I worked there for like 6 months. Then I went to another restaurant for 6 more months. And then I was like, okay, this is for me. I really want to like pursue this the right way. So I went to culinary school. Not that there is anything wrong with not going to culinary school and becoming a chef, because the majority of my mentors have never stepped in a culinary school and they're like the best, you know? Mm. But anyways, I went to culinary school and I came from not having a good education system, of not being good enough, to an education that excited me a lot because I wanted it to be the best and I needed to learn more. So after that, I knew there was time for me to continue my education in a different sense. So I moved to the US, to a city where most of the most competitive chefs in the world were working, right? I moved to California, to San Francisco, and I had two, sometimes three jobs a day, Michelin star restaurants in high-end hotels, because I became obsessive. And at that time, I didn't do it for the money. I did it because I really wanted to learn. I wanted to to bring my culture, my gastronomy, and my desire to put my thing of Peruvian cuisine right there. So I knew that one day I was going to have the opportunity to have my own team, to have my own opportunity. So all I wanted was resources and tools for my toolbox.
Can you share some of those invaluable lessons and experiences that you gained in these very prestigious Michelin star kitchens?
Absolutely. I have a few. I'll leave you as a couple just to make this, user-friendly. one of those is I remember I was very tired because I was doing doubles for a long time. And one of my mentors, Jason Paul, amazing chef, was at the line, right? I was a line cook. I finished a dish and I bring him to him in the pass. And I knew inside me that dish that I gave to him to take out of the dining room wasn't 100% right. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't 100% right. So I was like, okay, whatever. It's going to be okay. It's just one dish, right? He stopped the dish. He looked at it and he was like, hey, Rodrigo, come here. He said, and I was like, well, yes, chef. He's like, everything you do is an extension of you. Everything. Every little thing you do is an extension of you. So if you don't feel proud of it, don't serve it. All right? That touched my soul, you know? Because afterwards, I told him, and he asked me, are you proud of this? Of course, I said no, right? So he told me, never again give me something that you don't feel proud of. All right? This is you. This dish is you. You're better than this. All right? So redo it. So that was amazing because I can't stop thinking about that phrase during the whole service. So after service, I couldn't with myself, right? So I was like, hey, Shay, I want to talk to you. I'm so sorry, you know, I had a rough day. Excuses, right? I don't give a crap. He said, well, excuses, right? Everybody has an excuse. You do it right or you don't do it right. That's there is only two ways, good or bad. There is no middle. And let me tell you something, because this lesson, take it with you outside the kitchen, he said, because you have to be proud of everything you do, not only in the kitchen, as a friend, as a father, as an employer. One day you're going to have your own team. One day you're going to be facing them. And this is how you do leadership. You know, this is how people are going to want to follow. Not because you are an aggressive leader do this, do that. It's because you teach with the example, you teach with actions, you teach with, that's how people trust you, all right? So I cannot trust you if you do things like that. And I was yeah, you're right, I'm sorry, puta madre, I start crying. I'm just kidding, I didn't cry. but that's one of the main lessons. And I applied this into my kitchen in Artesan in New York. I tell this story every time because I think it has such important, impactful meaning in me that I try to tell the guys, listen, guys, everything you do is an extension of you. How you say hi to the people, how do you look in the eye, how you shake a hand, how you talk, how you express yourself. Everything is you. You have to be sure you're doing the right way. If this is how you want people to see you, if you're doing something with meaning, then do it, right? But but I just want people that want to be the best of themselves every single day they're here, Another amazing lesson was you need to learn how to delegate. You cannot do it all. You need to trust your team because at the end of the day, it's one chef I remember, I became a sous chef at a Michelin restaurant and it was the most I've been, at that time. And I was wanted to do everything so perfect that sometimes you like overlook instead of like, you know, because, but in an innocent way, because I just wanted to do right, right? I wasn't trying to do anything wrong. So executive chef put a 50-year-old guy, like 4 years of experience, you know, come to me and tell me, hey, listen, Rodrigo, I really like you, all right? You're a hard worker. You're always on time. You're the first one in arrive, the last one in leave, and et cetera, but listen, you need to learn how to trust your team, because one day you're going to have your restaurant, you're going to have your own staff, and you also have to understand that a restaurant is a business, okay? So if you are 24 hours at the restaurant, then there is not a business. There is not a business. It's a job. And you need to be able to be outside the restaurant to have creativity, to open a second location, to, you have to think like that now. At that point, I didn't think like that. I think like kitchen service, 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 perfection, perfection, service, service. You do this, you lay, come here, do it. That's true. If I really want to have my own restaurant and have a life and maybe be an entrepreneur and have a second business, I need to create a system that allows me to have my team working good, but not be depending on me. And I think that that also applies to any type of business industry, not only in the food, not in any business in the world. If you are there all the time and you cannot let them happen, then you are a worker, but not like a business owner. And then you have to work hard at the beginning, but you have to find a way when you detach a little bit. But that's it.
Rodrigo talks about applying what he's learned in culinary school to his restaurants and what it's like cooking for NBA stars when we come back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
How have you kind of taken some of those lessons and applied them in your restaurant, Artesano, in New York City?
A lot. Actually, I am actually, as we speak, doing that, no? I'm in Florida right now and my restaurant is open. I'm not there today. And I'm flying to Mykonos next week for a consultation for 3 weeks. So again, the system. So when we opened Artesano the first year, I was almost 7 days a week, 24 hours, sleeping in the PDR. Like I was literally living at the restaurant. But because I'm the type of guy that when they start a project, I rather go beyond the line for a short period of time than stuck there for a long time. Then it's hard for me to leave. So we create strong basis, a strong system where my amazing team is doing an amazing job. So I go to New York 1 week out of the month. Mm-hmm. Every season I go change the menu. I have daily phone call with my chef de cuisine. Of course, I know exactly what's going on. I know exactly what happened yesterday, but I don't have to be there every day. You know, I can watch them from my camera here. So if they're not working. You know?
So always watching.
Yeah, I'll be watching, guys. My boys, I don't know where we'll come to the kitchen. So that's the thing, you know, and then they feel good because you don't have somebody breathing in your neck, you know. I said, this is your space. Be creative. Try it out. This is what we do, you know. And I think that we have a very nice philosophy in the kitchen. That's why between the flexibility, the freedom, and the environment. I mean, we have happy people working with us in Artesano, fortunately. We're opening actually our second location first quarter of 2025 in Brickell, Miami.
Oh,
Artesano,
congrats.
Miami. So thank you very much. Yeah, we're actually just signed the lease and starting construction very soon. So that's a very good indicator that it's working, you know?
Absolutely. It sounds like, you know, from your stories that this was an idea that you kind of, you know, were working towards for a while. What was the vision for this restaurant and what was it like seeing that come to life?
Yes. So Artesano is, oh my God, it has a lot of meaning, you know? Let's start with the name of it, Artesano, mm-hmm. like handcrafted, artisanal, handmade. You know, so everything goes around that, no? Like we're crafting dishes every time you sit under the table, one by one, you know, and everything, all the concept goes around it. Like, for example, our dishes took over 6 months to arrive to New York because they are stone dishes made in Peru. They are like literally stone dishes from the rivers.
Oh, so the actual dishes. Yeah.
Yeah. The actual dish where we put the food in it. Mm-hmm. So it's made from an artesano in Peru, an artisan guy. So all of it, and our cups, our dishes, you know, the architecture around it too, is like very like architecture, like stone. So we were trying to tell you that we're trying to handcraft our vision of Peruvian cuisine. We are a very inclusive kitchen. We understand that to do good food, you have to be open-minded and to allow other techniques and culture to join the party, to discover new flavors, new textures, new ideas. So we don't do traditional Peruvian cuisine. We do tradition as an inspiration, but we like to play around. You know, some people hate that, especially the traditional ones. Some people appreciate that. And at the end of the day, when you throw yourself out there, you have to be okay that there are some people that are going to like what you do and some people that won't. And that's fine. We need both, right? We are we're not going to like 100% of the people, but I believe that if you stick true to yourself and do what you think is best with your heart and do it the right way, I think it's just a matter of time to things follow along.
Are there particular ingredients or flavors, though, that consistently, you know, show up in your menus?
Yes, of course. I love spicy, but not all. I love peppers, I should say. Sometimes spicy, sometimes I just like the flavor of the spicy, but not the spiciness. So okay. There's techniques of remove the spicy out, but just to preserve the flavor of the actual fruit or vegetable. So we do that a lot of Artesano. We ferment some peppers. We play around with the actual pepper in pastes to make them jam or to make them sweet. So because Peru has very nice and different unique type of chilies. So we bring rocoto from Peru. We bring ají amarillo. We bring mochero. We bring like a machete. So a different type of peppers that we like to play around and to create like different sauces. But also like, of course, so this is the thing. Every dish in Artesano has a story to tell. All right. It's not like, oh, this tastes good. That's why it's in the menu. No, this dish represents the Andes of Peru. And the server have to explain you absolutely everything about the dish. Right. You come here for the experience. So, for example, we have a dish in the menu that is called gnocchi huacatay. Huacatay is a herb that grows in the Andes, in Cusco, in very high altitude. So what we do is we try to make the dish around that ingredient. Right. The huacatay. So with the herb, we make a huacatay butter, we make a huacatay oil, we make a huacatay powder, we make a huacatay gnocchi. So at the end, we're trying to maximize the ingredient. Of course, there are some things that have to be in consideration with to creating a dish. Like, of course, flavor is the most important. I don't care if you're trying to make the shrink dance, break dance in the dish. If it doesn't taste good, then we don't do it, you know? So it have to taste good. It have to tell a story. It have to taste personality. It have to taste technique. And it have to be beautiful presented. And it have to have, you know, it have to be like New York style. So modern, mm-hmm. you know, with personality. And let's go. So that's kind of like what we do. It could be a tasty menu. You could have a dish inspiring an herb from the mountains. You can have my grandma ceviche to open the tasty mm-hmm. menu. We'll go back to normal. So that's inspiration, but we probably play around with the presentation, ingredients balance to have something a little more refined, but it's still my grandma ceviche. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's what you have. And then you have an amazing dish at the end that is, for example, moray, that is a dessert that is inspired in the Incas diet and also in a geography site in Cusco called moray. Mm-hmm. So moray, if you Google it, it's there are Andeans. I don't know how to sell it. So basically, moray is a place in Cusco. Basically, okay. There are different circles like this, circle under the bottom. And every layer has a different soil and a different mm-hmm. weather. It's amazing, yeah? The Inca used to use it for experimentation. So we were thinking the other day, how can we make this representation and combine it? Because this goes together, right? Because the Inca experience practice in those soils what ingredients work for winter, for summer, what soil is better for potatoes, for corn. So they use that for their food at the end. So we combine that idea of moray, and then we wanted to combine it with the two most eaten ingredients from the Incas, which like was cheese and was corn. So we start creating and we bought a silicone mold that looks just like moray, literally. I'll send you a photo later. Remind me. So it's a cheesecake. It's a cheese mousse. We spray it with the green cacao, so it looks like it's grass on top. And then we make a corn ice cream. We do like lime gel. So working all the ingredients into a dish, and that was kind of cool. No? So you're like, oh, the idea is that you find dishes that they're only artisanal. You won't go to the next door Peruvian cuisine and find this dish. You know, this only mm-hmm. here, and that's kind of what we're trying to do.
What do you love about fine dining and creating these experiences for people? And why was that, important for you, for your restaurant?
When I have the opportunity to showcase Peruvian food in New York City, I knew I had a big responsibility, and whatever I was gonna present in the restaurant saying it's Peruvian food, it could be interpreted the wrong way. So I wanted to make sure that I was proud of what I was serving, that I knew that this is like, but I have to also at the same time, as I mentioned, I had to stick true to myself, you know, and I have to do my version of what I think that is me, you know, this is what I think is working. This is what I think I'm proud of, this representing Peruvian food. So it was a little hard to convince a little bit my business partner at the beginning. They wanted, no, bro, let's just do lomo saltado, classic stuff, bro. You know, and they're like, we have to do something different. We have to be different, mm-hmm. you know. And then sometimes we have specials, yeah, but like in the main course of the restaurant, it's a little different, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How is it? I know you had mentioned that you will be opening one in Florida, but I know you've been doing pop-ups down there as well with Ilyu. How similar and different are these two restaurant concepts?
Well, this is the thing. IU started it back in California. Okay. Mm-hmm. I used to do this once. It's funny. My first pop-up in San Francisco, pop-ups are big. All right. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, once I was working in Michelin restaurants, I felt like I feel ready to throw myself out there and see what the people say about it. I need opinions. I need like, but if you invite somebody, they're going to say, oh, it was good. I need somebody to pay for it and give me a review. You know, mm-hmm. so I rented a coffee shop for one night. I told him, bro, listen, you open for 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and you close at night. Rent me the space for 5 to 9 or 5 to 11, make some extra money, and I'll clean after. Puta, I went around a lot of places until one said yes. My first pop-up, I'm not kidding, only two people show up.
Oh,
I was like, oh my God. I was living in San Jose. So I was like, I'm going to go all the way to San Francisco, driving 60 miles just for two people. But I was like, you know what? These guys to start didn't even know that they're the only ones showing up. They're just buying their ticket. Then they're making plans to come and try this. And I haven't done this before, so I'm going to do it. I went. I did it. They love it so much that they hired me the next week for their birthday. 90 people. So it was a reward of not giving up. Those are little life lessons that told me, like, bro, things get hard at the beginning. You're going to quit. So how are you supposed to have your own restaurant? Dude, you have to do it. And I did it. So anyways, this was just a memory. But what I was trying to say is that it gets so popular, those pop-ups, that after, first it was once a month, then two times a month, then it was every Saturday. And then it was every Saturday, twice a day. So I have two sittings, 5 to 7 and 7:30 to 10. And then we did it like for like 5 years, and they become like a pop-up restaurant. Then when I came back to Florida, because once our artesano was doing great, and I'm always trying to keep doing something. So I went back home here in Florida. I was like, I need to be doing something. I need to keep, my wife was like, bro, just calm down. You know, like, you're like creating content, running a restaurant. Like, dude, chill. No. Okay, I'll do something else. So I start doing pop-ups again. I reactivate IU. I make a deal partnership with the with a coffee that my favorite coffee shop. They went, bro, let's do something together. Oh my God, I love the idea. So we started doing that every Saturday, and every Saturday has been like super sold out. The waiting list for 3 weeks, I love it. Mm-hmm. So I do that just for fun, to be honest, because I really like it. But it's the same idea. Creative dishes, very put together. It's literally like a whole blown restaurant for the weekend. Servers, runners, expo, managers, 20 people in action. Yeah.
How do all these experiences within your restaurants compare to cooking for celebrities and NBA stars? Do you kind of take the same approach, or do you have to be a little bit different with those?
Oh, it's very different for sure. Mm-hmm. And so that's more like, well, it's the pain of the athlete. I cook for a few. Some had a little more like a strict diet. Some doesn't really have strict diet. They are just super picky. Like, I have this athlete, I won't say names, but he literally eat 2 vegetables, asparagus and broccoli, and I have to turn my brain around to make those 2 vegetables in gazillion different ways. I was running out of ideas. I'd be like, listen, would you be down to explore new flavors? No, I just want this 2 vegetables, whatever. Oh my God, okay, let's do that. It's kind of like limited. I have some other clients that they were like foodies, right? Oh my God, I love Japanese cuisine, Peruvian food. Just make me a tasty menu every time. Oh my God, that's my jam, right? I can get curators. I have some that they love homey dishes, so they feel like they are not entering to a restaurant. They want to feel like they're eating at home, you know? They want fresh made rice, a nice stew, a nice fresh salad, simple, healthy, well-balanced. And listen, I told you, that's what I cook in my home. So it's basically what I cook at home. So basically I'm going to cook you what I normally eat at home. All I need is your allergies, your food preferences, if you have intolerance, whatever, and then I'll work on that. So what I do is just, I like to be 1 week ahead. So this is the menu for next week. And then by the end of Friday, for the next Friday, so I can, you know, for the shoppings and everything. But I did it because this is the truth, right? Back in 2020, the pandemic, the Raptors came to Tampa, right, to find a city to be the locals. And I was fan of Norman Powell, one of the basketball at that time. He's playing right now in a different team. So you know what? I'm going to reach out. I was like, hey, listen, I'm private chefing. If you need any help, put her manager, Jennifer, call me right away. I said, hey, listen, Norman is actually looking for a private chef. Let's talk. So literally 2 days after, we started working together. It was an amazing experience. Yeah, it was cool.
What's the most difficult? Cooking for, you know, an athlete with like a very specific diet, cooking for restaurant guests, or cooking for social media?
I think cooking for an athlete, to be honest.
Yeah.
I would say that by far. Some of them, I remember one of them I had to, before grade, that's what I quit. I think that was my last one because it was taking a little too much of my time. And also, every time I have to make a menu, I have a meeting with a nutritionist, with a psychologist, because X ingredients affect their mood. Like, what the heck, bro? It's a carrot. It's just a carrot. No, but too much carrot, bro. Come on, man. Like, no, I cannot do this anymore, man. That's sad. I was frustrated because this guy, I needed to, it was like a kid, because he was like, make sure he drinks his protein shake before train. Well, okay, but what do you mean I have to make sure? Like, do I have to make sure he drinks it in front of me? Or like, no, just do it and put it like in the fridge and he will drink it and he'll leave. Okay. So what I do is I'll make his breakfast and put the protein shake, and then I'll come back for making dinner, right? And then when I come back, the shake was there in the fridge. And it was like, oh, hey, so, oh, I made you a shake, by the way, in the morning. I don't know if you saw it. It was there, like, you know, your nutrition team told me I need to drink it. Oh, don't worry about that. Don't listen to them. We're good. I'm good. I'm good. And then I didn't know what to do, because I had, should I lie to them and tell them he's drinking? Or like, I mean, he's the one paying me right now. So, you know, so I was like, oh my God, I cannot be babysitting these guys, you know? So I was like, okay, I put my 2 weeks notice and then I move on, because we had another project going on, but it was fun. I mean, I would do it again, but I don't know. Right now I probably won't. I am a little busy. Yeah.
It seems like you're a little busy. How do you have time even for, you know, social media videos at this point?
Well, my second passion is teaching. So okay. I was like, okay, how can I teach something that I enjoy doing? So I was like, let's teach how to cook. So I start doing my recipes, and I do it like when I have time. I'm trying to be consistent at it, because it happens to be a nice side gig, because mm-hmm. a lot of deals are starting to come in and opportunities because of this, to be honest. So I was like, oh, why not to explore this route? Because this is the thing. If you asked me 10 years ago that I would be able to make money outside a kitchen, I would tell you, how am I supposed to make money if I'm a cook? I need to stand up in a kitchen and cook. I cannot mm-hmm. work remote as a cook. I need to be physically in a place. But with YouTube, with Instagram, with, you know, documentaries or whatever, you can. And I'm like in the point of my life where, yeah, the older I grow, I get, like, that my life goals change a little bit. So even though we're opening Miami, and if something happens in the future and we do a little more, then welcome to it. It just happened that it's naturally happening, but I'm not looking for it. But what I'm looking for is to have more time for me to be able to do what you're doing. I have a podcast, you know, and I'm talking with this guy that is in Florida, but I don't have to be in Florida with him,
right?
You know, and I make money and I'm happy and I have time for me and I can show my personality and I can whatever. Then that's what I would like to keep pursuing, because I think that my future at least is right there.
I had to ask you, you did have a viral TikTok making scrambled eggs with an ostrich egg. So I'm curious if you've tried any other recipes with one since then.
Honestly, that was crazy. I thought that was not going to perform any well at all, because it was like, again, but I was walking in the farmer's market in New York and I saw this huge egg and I was like, oh my God, I honestly never tried an orchid egg before, so I'm going to buy it. And I was like, okay, I paid $30 for one freaking egg. I'm going to make a video out of it. I'm going to eat it. So the girl was telling me, yeah, because it's like 24 eggs in one and this and that. And I was like, okay, I need to know the taste of it. So once I made the video, and honestly, for me, I don't know if there is different type of flavor, but that flavor tastes like a normal chicken egg. I didn't notice any different at all. It was literally the whole pack of eggs that you buy in the supermarket inside one egg. So when you look it, so I was like, no, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. So I didn't do it. I didn't do it again. But it was fun though. To open it, you need to use a hammer. It was crazy. Yeah.
I mean, coming from someone who loves eggs so much that you have a tattoo of one on your arm, I feel like you are somewhat of an expert in the subject, right?
Oh, yeah. I know one thing or two about eggs, and I'm telling you, that flavor wasn't something. I like duck eggs, though. Those are my favorite. Duck eggs. Right. Those are good.
Duck eggs. Yes. All right. Well, I guess a final question, you know, before we head to rapid fire and our last question, what's next for you? What are you excited for in the coming year?
So hot news, I'm telling you. Ooh, I'm going to Peru to do a documentary.
Wow.
About ceviche. It's going to be about ceviche. And it's going to be a huge, amazing production. And hopefully, once it's the cine of Peru, we present it to Netflix or HBO, we'll see. But that is that ambitious, no? It's going to be a great, and I'm very proud of being part of this. I'm going to be the host. So going around Peru, the three regions, the jungle, the mountains. I'm going to go to my town, Chiclayo, and I'm going to talk with this. I have my friends. I mean, I have a lot of connections because I'm from there. There's like still people that have 90, 99 year old that are making ceviche the way it used to be 200 years ago. So we're trying to talk about the origins, the way it used to be, talk with the most prestigious chef in Peru, the influence that has also Peruvian ceviche in cuisine from around the world. Because I was in Europe not too long ago, and I noticed there are ceviche menus because it's just that good. And it's also, we've been inspired for so many cuisines, but now we're also inspiring cuisines to, you know, play around with this technique. So I think it's important that there is something good out there that tells you the story in a nice and easy digestive way for the world, no? And I'm excited for that.
That's so awesome. Congratulations. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that one come to light as well, and all of your other things that you have in store. So thank you so much for taking the time. We're going to finish things off with a little rapid fire round and then one final question that we ask everybody here on the podcast. So rapid fire questions. Celebrity that you've loved cooking for the most?
Rhys Hoskins. He's the pitcher of the Phillies.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I love it. He was the foodie. So he's the one that let me do whatever I want. So I love Rhys.
Best kind of customer. One word to describe your cooking style.
Bold.
If you weren't a chef, what profession would you pursue?
Acting.
Go to comfort food.
Chinese food.
First dish that you mastered.
Ceviche.
Favorite midnight snack.
Oh my God, my wife is going to kill me. I sneak in the kitchen and reheat the pizza slice from dinner earlier.
Amazing. We've all done it. Go-to condiment.
Salt?
Sure.
That's the basic one. I cannot cook without it. Yeah.
All right. Our final question is not rapid fire. You can take as long as you want on this, and there are no rules. We just want to know what would be on the menu for your perfect food day. So we want you to take us through your breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can travel, time travel, spend as much money as you want. Anyone can cook these meals for you. It's your day. Have at it.
Oh, wow. If I have all these luxury options, I would definitely start with the French scrambled eggs, seven of them for sure. And they have to be duck eggs. My tattoo? So because I love that eggs. And since I don't eat it every day, if it's a one-time thing, why not? You know?
It's your day.
I'll do my scrambled eggs. Yes. I'll put a little bit of cream cheese too, some chopped chives, salt. They have to be cooked in butter. And then I will serve it with a very nice and toasty sourdough. But I don't like when the bread is like over toasted, that is kind of like too hard. I like it like toasted in the outside, but like it's soft in the middle. Mm-hmm. Oh, delicious. I love avocado, so definitely avocado. And I will put a dash of chili oil on top of my eggs just to give a little bit of this, you know, spiciness to there. That's for the food. Then I love orange juice. I'm a simple guy in the breakfast, but natural orange juice, no bottled orange juice. So some orange juice right there. I think 100% a good cup of black coffee.
Okay.
Freshly ground, you know, and that's it. So that will be my breakfast. Mid-morning, I would 100% go to Chef Wong, which is a very old chef in Peru that makes the best ceviche in the planet. He is amazing. And he doesn't have a menu in his restaurant. He literally cooks what he wants. So you go there and you ask, I want a cold dish and a hot dish. Perfect. He'll just get the fish, slice it right there, make your fresh ceviche. Yeah, that good. So definitely I will have a meat snack with that ceviche. Yes. So fresh, so delicious, the best.
Amazing.
Then I will probably travel to Spain for lunch.
Okay.
And then I will get a beautiful paella. Oh, as you can tell, I love seafood. So to have all the seafood involved mixed to there. Yeah, I would have that for lunch. Then for dinner, I would go to Gordon Ramsay's kitchen and I will make me his famous beef Wellington.
Okay.
And we will have a nice glass of red wine. I will chat about food, life, you know, and catch up.
Are you having dessert?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why not? I will go. For this, I need to go back to Chiclayo. I'm sorry. But from London, I'll take a plane. I'll go back to my town. I'll knock my auntie's door and I'll say, please, can you make me some picarones? Picarones is basically the Peruvian style of churros. It's like a fried dough and we make a nice honey chancaca sauce. It's unbelievably amazing with a nice ice cream on top. That's all you need to be a happy person.
Wow. That is quite the food day. And I love that we traversed to multiple countries for it. And it sounds absolutely perfect. Congratulations again on the new addition to the family, the new restaurant upcoming, the documentary, all of the things. So many exciting projects in the works. And we can't be more thrilled for you.
Thank you so much, Jamie, for the invitation.
Of course, you can catch Rodrigo's episodes of Dig In With on foodnetwork.com. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.